This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Okay, we are live here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. You're here with Dr. Jeff himself. Oh, God, how are you? I'm still going crazy after last night's Dodger game. But hello there, Jill. How you doing? And, okay. Ah, I got my corgis here. And, all right. So, good. Well, I'm waving. So, anyway, how to get a hold of me? Very easily. If you're here live on Pet Life Radio, 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. You can also just hop on and text me. And here, when we're on Instagram Live, I can see you here. Just go ahead and send me your questions, and we'll be happy to answer. Steve, how you doing? I hope Bethany told you. I was just getting back at you to see how you were doing. And yesterday was my sister's birthday, and actually one of my best friends from high school, both November 1st. So happy birthday to both. And there she is, the birthday girl. So pretty scary. Beth, when you think about, being 69, I mean, wow, that's nuts. So first of all, those of you who like baseball, and even if you like baseball, I mean, just, I know people that only like watch baseball at the very end of the season during the playoffs and the World Series. This was an insane World Series. First of all, obviously, I'm a Dodger fan being here in L.A., and to play as poorly as they did and still win is amazing. They had golden opportunities, and to win this earlier, and to also, of the four games you have to win in a World Series, there's seven games, you got to win four of them. They won three of them on the road, which is really crazy. So only one they won at home, and it wasn't the one I went to on Tuesday night. The second they won that 18 inninger, that was a Monday. Tuesday, I was very, very fortunate enough. I don't know if you saw any of my posts, but I called my friend Cookie Johnson, that's Magic's wife, and I said, I don't want to put you out. I know this is a crazy ask, and I apologize in advance, but here I am, LA, for 63 years, been a Dodger fan, and I have, never been to a World Series, period, let alone, of course, one with the Dodgers there. She told me that it would be very difficult, and I said, don't worry about it, forget I asked. It's like, you can't win a lottery unless you buy a lottery ticket. You have to at least ask. So anyway, P.S., I got a note from her the next day, 2 days later, that they did have a couple of seats in their private box. Oh my God. It was, first of all, I can't thank them enough. It was so wonderful. And just to be there and in a private, I've never been there. I mean, just the entry, just walking in to an area where there's all these, there's fancy people in the private, there's the suites. And, it was a great experience, obviously wonderful seat. You could see everything. You're in the second level up, but it's like your own private area. And I mean, you walk in, they have food, they had an open bar. I mean, I'm spoiled now. This is like the first time I ever flew first class, right? On a long flight. And now you get spoiled after a while. And anything over 3 hours, you want to sit in luxury. And I can't afford it all the time. But it's a cool experience. Actually, if you have a lot of points, take advantage and use your points. Anyway, so let me see. I got some questions coming in. But it was great. And I am very appreciative to the Johnsons. That was so sweet. And it was really just a great feeling. All right. So we talk about the roads here. Go Dodgers. Yeah, I know, really. Anyway, when they won this game, I mean, first of all, to have this guy, Rojas, who was almost practically retired from baseball, comes in as a pinch hitter and hits a home run to tie the game. And then Will Smith, oh my God. So it was really, really crazy. All right. It was, what a game. So, baseball, I love that. And you know, something I don't necessarily disagree. It is kind of boring, but yeah, I'm going to the Rams game today. Hopefully that's more exciting. I think as far as action, you know, action, nonstop action, it's basketball or hockey. I mean, that stuff is going back and forth all the time. You know, you have the most lulls you have is, of course, in baseball. And football's got a lot of lulls too. But no, I agree with you. But it was when it's your home team and you're rooting for them, I think that's great. All right. All right, vestibular disease. So, Daisy, my 15-year-old border collie, you treated as doing somewhat better. How long would it take for them to be back to normal? It's been about 5 days now. Okay, first of all, I know I told you, Helen, that my old, when I was growing up, we had a German Shepherd, a white Shepherd named Sheba. She had multiple bouts of this vestibular disease called idiopathic vestibular disease. We joke and say the word idiopathic means we're a bunch of idiots and can't figure out what the reason is, but we don't know exactly what it is. Middle and inner ear, imbalance, infection, inflammation, who knows? And they usually to recover. And it could take days, it could take a week or more to recover completely, and there's no guarantee it won't happen again. And I think with Sheba, she had about four or five of these bouts. The last one, though, she recovered completely, but this time, her head, and for the rest of her life, and she lived to almost 17, the rest of her life, her head was tilted like that. That was her norm. Our norm is like this. Her norm was like this. But she was fine. So if it is just that. Now, of course, in a 15-year-old dog, there's always that concern that there's more going on here than just idiopathic vestibular disease. Because at this age, it could be some sort of severe, worse inflammation or infection in the brain or in the middle or inner ear. It could be a tumor. I mean, there are other things that we have to always watch out for. But already by the fact that she's doing better with really no treatment, our treatment, we can't treat the disease because we don't know what's causing it, but we can treat the symptoms. So we put them on like anti-vertigo medications like meclizine or bonine. And we assume maybe there's inflammation. We put them on a little non-steroidal or steroidal anti-inflammatory. So there are things we can do as just sort of what we call a shotgun approach. We don't really know exactly what we're treating, but we're trying to treat the symptoms, make the pet more comfortable, and that's the best we can do. So, I mean, the fact that she's already getting back to normal, and it's only been 5 days, then that's a good thing. All right. Just got a 27-pound cat. Thought it was good. He's urinating on his blanket. No crystals of infection. Well, first of all, a 27-pound cat. That's a cat. I mean, very few cats. I have one cat that I think is around 17, 18 pounds, and he's big. So 27 pounds, that's very big. It's either very large. I'd love to see a picture of this 27-pound cat. I mean, if we're really, really, really heavy, and it's possibly an issue with just his anatomy by being so heavy and maybe unwillingness to want to get up. So when he's lying down and he has that urge to urinate, he says, to heck with it. I'm too fat to get up. I'm just going to do it right here while I'm lying down. And also, it depends on age. How old is this 27-pound cat? I mean, it takes a long time to gain 27 pounds. So, I mean, if it's a much older cat, it could also be a weakness, a neurologic weakness, or neuromuscular weakness, again, predisposed because of the heavy weight. So, what I would do is make sure you get a urinalysis. And if your analysis is totally normal, then it's the other factors involved. If the urine is abnormal, if there are crystals, you may not see all the crystals, just so you know. And we know that male cats have a greater tendency to block. So it's very important to, you know, get a urine collected. I would recommend doing it via ultrasound. Your doctor should do it. That way you can also look at the bladder. You can look at the bladder wall thickness. You can actually see crystals and sludge in the bladder that you won't see on an x-ray. So very important, get the urine sample, have them look at the bladder via ultrasound while they're collecting that urine sample, and you'll get more answers that way. All right. Okay, let's see what you got here. Baseball is still almost on and on anymore. All right. Okay, what a game series it was. Yes, all right. Feel free to talk about the word. No, thank you. All right. Okay, I'm waving. So a couple of interesting things that came up in the news this week. They asked me to possibly do it if I was available. You know, I do some reporting for Inside Edition. And it was a story that really was disturbing to me. And they want to report on it as more of an alert to let people know that this stuff happens. And what is this stuff? There were four dogs involved, two each at separate parks. One was like at a more of a dog beach, and one was at a park. And they didn't specify whether it was a dog park or just a park, but dogs picked up were poisoned by methamphetamines, and one of them sadly didn't make it. Amphetamines. It's a major upper, and it speeds everything up. They don't know anything about it. The problem is we don't even know what to look for. Dogs, you know, they sniff in grass, they're sniffing and checking everything. The fact that it happened with dogs in a public setting leads me to believe that might this be something that was done on purpose. Like it was planned by somebody, but the dogs were, they don't know whether it was in a powder form, was it in a pill form. But as we know, dogs will eat things and sniff things out and lick things. That is part of their wondering, is this a safe thing or not? Is it good or not? So they sniff something. Was it affected by something that made it like taste good or smell good? No one knows much about it other than the fact that it was ingested and the dogs were tested, the bloods, and they had high levels of amphetamines in their bloodstream, and their actions supported that. It's an upper, and they were just really going nuts. Again, supportive therapy did the trick in time for three of the four. The one sadly was did not make it through the toxic episode, but it does happen. So here's the bottom line. There are a lot of strange people out there. Now, could this have been just haphazard randomly because it was a public place and it was on a beach and it was in a park? There are a lot of homeless people around that might be using those areas for their quote-unquote homes to sleep at night. And was this just a careless, accidental thing from doing the drugs? We don't know. But be really careful. Be vigilant out there. When you go to anything, any place that's public where other people have access to it, would you keep an eye on your dogs? Be really, really careful. Don't let them pick up everything, sniff everything, keep them occupied. If you have a dog that has a tendency to want to eat, pick everything in sight, get a basket muzzle. All right. That way they can't ingest anything. They can still breathe. They can still pant. You know, mind you, a basket muzzle is not the kind of muzzles that, you know, somebody might put onto a dog who is visiting the vet and is a very aggressive dog and is trying to bite everybody. That's a muzzle. These are basket muzzles. They're much bigger. They fit over the entire snout. They're like many, many openings so they can breathe. They can actually drink water from them also, but they can't. They can't bite down on anything, and that would be the safest thing to do if you have such a dog. Eloise writes, "My dog has zero symptoms of possible pneumonia. I put my dogs in doxy. Should I bring them in? Is there any chest and heart?" So we have to check. Of course, we can take X-rays. I think with that dog, the way it was, and then with the bleeding coming out of the nose, I think it was lungs, but it was secondary to heart. I really do. Again, we could, for your other dogs to be sure, I wouldn't necessarily start them on doxycycline. When you start putting dogs on antibiotics haphazardly, especially as a preventive, then you wonder, are you going to ultimately create a resistance when the real thing happens? Now, would it be wrong to take a chest X-ray and evaluate them? If they're not coughing and their test is clear, I wouldn't do anything. Just keep an eye on them like you would anything. You know, somebody in the house gets a cold, you're not going to start treating yourself for a cold. You haven't got any symptoms yet. And you may not. You probably won't. So anyway, I remember when I was in vet school a few hundred years ago, and our bacteriology professor, we always joke later on when he was probably long gone that he'd be rolling over in his grave today if you realized how many veterinarians are just putting animals on antibiotics for no real reason, just because they think there may be an infection. Or even, I mean, he would go so far as not even to start an antibiotic unless you cultured whatever it was that you were trying to treat. So you get the right antibiotic. Now that, again, that gets impractical. I get it. I don't even do that. When you I at least try to identify what kind of bacteria. Is it rods? Is it cocci? Is it a mixture? And then treat accordingly based on historically how which drugs do best for these kinds of bacteria. Then all of a sudden, you'll pick up a MRSA, and it's methicillin resistant to pretty much everything except chloramphenicol, which is dangerous for you, and it's not so great for the dog either, and or amikacin, which is only injection, and you got to give your dog a shot every day. It's really, sometimes we don't have the choices that we normally do, but again, within reason. But if you have a dog that's sub or aclinical and is acting fine, and the x-rays and the blood tests are fine, do not treat as a preventive. Okay, LA Pet Care, how you doing? Karen, how are you? All right, 15-year-old dog Penny has been vomiting up her food for over a day. We have her chicken and rice, but it's still coming up. She's pooping normally, acting normally. At what point do we really worry? So, great question, by the way. And that's, you know, one of the most, I would say, prevalent calls that we get on AirVet is going to be GI stuff, vomiting and diarrhea, okay, behavior stuff. Obviously, limping. Many limps are not emergency. But so with this, here's the thing. Vomiting breeds vomiting. So when you have a dog that vomits, picture this. Picture a rag, okay? The rag is wet. You're cleaning it. You put it under the water, running water, and you wring it out. You just got to get all that water out, right? Before you let it dry. So that is the stomach. When a stomach starts going through the vomiting episodes, it's almost like it's wringing out. Now the stomach itself is irritated. So anything that goes into that stomach, even something as benign as water, and stretches that stomach, it can induce vomiting again. So first thing I recommend is hold them off food for at least half a day, if not 24 hours. Okay, you can let them drink, but what I recommend, because you want to control how much water can be ingested at one time, stick, depending on the size of the dog, anywhere from 2 to 4 to 6 ice cubes in an empty water bowl. As the ice melts, the dog can go up and drink the water, all right? But usually, some dogs like chewing on ice cubes too. If you have one such dog, do fewer ice cubes. But otherwise, just let the wait until the water, the ice melts. They can go up and drink a little bit of water at a time over a long period of time. So it's not enough to stretch the stomach and give that stomach rest. And then as long as they're eating fine, they're active and animated, and they're pooping fine, that most likely whatever's going on, it's not super serious. Most likely, I'll never say never, but most likely it's going to be fine. And then start slowly reintroducing food. Another thing you can do is see your veterinarian and get an anti-emetic, which is a medication like a Serenia pill or injection or Zofran, and something that will kind of block the vomiting center again to prevent the vomiting and put the, you know, give the vomiting control. You can also try like a Prilosec or a Pepcid. That might help as well if the vomiting is also now because of excess stomach acid. So there are things that you can do. I wouldn't panic, but again, easy on the food. And easy on the water. All right, let's take a quick break. It's 9:19 by my clock. I hope if you're here on time, you remembered to change your clocks. So that's a good thing. Otherwise, you would have been here and have to wait an hour from 8 to 9 o'clock. I hope you didn't do that. I'm not worth waiting an hour for, trust me. All right, anyway, go away. Don't go away. Be back after these short messages. More sponsors here at Pet Life Radio. Take it away, Mark.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising, so I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5-mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back here. Perfect timing for use of Pet Life Radio. Great question. What blood work should we ask for when we come back for the two senior corgis, 13-year-olds? That's a wonderful question because there are so many blood tests available. So it really depends. If you have a, you're doing a blood test on a 13-year-old dog and it is for basic senior panel, I do a CBC, that's complete blood count, a chem panel, complete with thyroid, all right, and a urinalysis. That's my basic senior blood test. Now, having said that, if this were a cat, also a senior panel. By the way, what a senior. It's a good question also. For me, small breeds and cats, seniors become seniors at like 8. Big breeds, 7. Even if they're perfect. If they're perfect, 7 years old, I'm going to do a senior panel. If it's a small breed or a cat, I'm going to do it at 8 years of age. Now, if the animal is having other issues or it's going to be going down for an anesthesia, that's a different story. Then we're going to do some blood work as well. That on the senior panel, basic senior panel for a cat, now we're talking 8 years of age, even 7, 7.5, okay? Not only thyroid, I'm doing what's called a T4 by ED, equilibrium dialysis. Why? Because senior cats have a tendency to be hyperthyroid. The regular thyroid value, T4, in a regular senior panel cannot differentiate whether from what we call sick thyroid syndrome, okay, or real, true hyper or hypothyroid. Dogs usually get, senior dogs that have thyroid issues are going to be hypo, and cats are going to be hyper. So what's important is to make the differentiation, you need that second test, that T4 by ED. Because a lot of times, and this is a very big problem I've seen in many of my colleagues, and I picture that I get an animal will come in and I look at the blood work and they're on a thyroid supplement, a dog. They're on a thyroid supplement. And I'm thinking, why is this dog on a thyroid supplement? I look at the blood and the T4 was a little low. So what they did was, you mean to tell me they actually made a diagnosis of hypothyroid just on a regular T4? That's unacceptable. I run a T4 by ED on that same dog and it's normal. So you have to know that if you're going to put an animal, a dog, on thyroid supplement, you have to make sure you do an ED to differentiate sick thyroid syndrome. So if the dog has other problems, they brought it to you possibly because of other problems, you will see a low thyroid, but it's not real. It's not thyroid, it's because of sick thyroid syndrome, and it's not hypothyroidism. They do not need supplements. Now, I would use that if I see a low thyroid and the dog is otherwise fine, I will add on after the fact a T4 by ED. Or if they come in and one of the problems they're having in the senior pet is that it's a little sluggish, the skin is getting thin and greasy, it's getting a little, overweight. Now I'm thinking, well, those are perfect symptoms of hypothyroidism. I'm going to do a T4 and a T4 by ED. Cats, on the other hand, also, they will... I've had many a cat over the years diagnosed with heart disease because the heart rate is fast, super fast, and liver disease because the liver enzymes are elevated. And guess what? It wasn't heart and it wasn't liver. It was hyperthyroidism. And had they included a T4 by ED in their blood panel, they would have made that diagnosis. And dogs and cats with hyperthyroidism have a fast heart rate, well over 200. And we'll probably have liver enzyme elevation. So these are the little gems that, it just gets me crazy because it's so well known nowadays. And yet there are so many animals that are put on these medications unnecessarily because they were misdiagnosed. So, I want you to be really, really careful. Another question. Hold on. Tina, try AirBed to have 20%. Yes, video call. Eloise, Elvis had zero symptoms. We had just checked his heart. Just trying to be diligent and cough. I mean, it is, unless another thing that could be to when things like this happen, this is an older dog that literally started having severe breathing trouble, fairly acute onset. Maybe it was, and with the lungs, definitely when it was, blood was coming out of the nose, you know, it's obvious respiratory. That it could be that it was a pneumonia. And so if that dog had what's called aspiration pneumonia, for some reason they vomit, they then inhale the vomit as it gets into the lungs, and it could actually cause a fairly severe, aggressive, rapid onset pneumonia that could be life-threatening. And I mean, I've been involved in law cases as the expert witness when things like this happened at a hospital, and the necessary precautions weren't taken. I don't want to get into the details, but I find it very frustrating. So that is that's a real possibility as well. All right. So Wave. Hey, Larry, how you doing? All right. You know, if your dog has, how do you know if your dog has a bladder infection? So the issue is that usually the symptoms are excessive water drinking, excessive urinating. The urine looks very smelly, or it looks sometimes in color. Sometimes you see blood. And the thing is, bladder infection or bladder inflammation, some things are something called the sterile cystitis. Cystitis just means inflamed. So the bladder wall can be very thickened. It can be due to, as I said, debris in the bladder. It can be due to actually infection. It can be due to TCC, transitional cell carcinoma. So you really need, you need the urine analysis. And that will take you through what is going on in the bladder. What is the urinary pH? Is it very basic, which is a problem? Or is it acidic? Is there a lot of urine protein? Is this something more related to the kidneys and not just the bladder? Are there bacteria? What type of bacteria are there? Are there a lot of white cells? If you have a lot of white cells, you can anticipate probably some kind of infection. Or it could be sterile also. But oftentimes, if the white cells get greater than 4 per high power field, I'll do a urine culture also. So, and also, if you have a very dilute urine, because the animal with an infection is drinking a lot of water, you may not see the bacteria when you send the urine off. So use the white cells also as a hint that there may be an infection. If there's bacteria, you got to culture. You got to do a urine culture. It's called a culture and an MIC, a minimum inhibitory concentration. That is where they test the urine for the bacteria and see what antibiotics are going to work best on that infection. You want to be very specific. So frequent urinations, frequent trips to the litter box, drinking a lot of water, smelly urine, bloody urine, just a different color. These are all symptoms that there may be a bladder problem. It doesn't necessarily mean infection, but certainly something that needs to be addressed. All right. Not good. He's sleeping a lot. Diarrhea yesterday, but I'm worried. All right. So my dog is not doing well, sleeping a lot. Had diarrhea yesterday too. And it was sort of hard. So here again, anytime there's a noticeable change in behavior, rapid onset change, yes, I would be worried about something. What that something could be, it could be a zillion things. So you got to get, first of all, the age of the pet, all right? Lifestyle of the pet. What was it doing or eating? Did it possibly get a hold of anything a day or two before? Remember, when dogs have GI problems and have diarrhea, I'm going to go through the list of things we see with acute onset diarrhea and how other factors might dictate how and what we're thinking about when we evaluate this diarrhea. But nerves, stress, anxiety, excitement, he's come from Halloween, yeah. Eating something you shouldn't have, dietary change, okay? Dietary indiscretion. So all these things could affect a dog's acute onset of soft stool diarrhea. Now, if they're really lethargic, how old is this dog? Could it be dehydrated? Was it running around? Maybe this has nothing to do. Maybe the diarrhea is coming from stress because of the discomfort, because he was running around at the park the day before and now is muscle sore. So you really have to test it out. You want to see the animal, you have to check, get a blood test. If it's an old dog, when was the last time it had a lab work? There's no simple answer for these things. The only simple part is realizing, based on a thorough history and physical, what you need to do to get the answer, which test you need to run, what's going to help. But history and physical, that's the one thing that these young veterinarians are bypassing very quickly. Your good history, thorough history, and thorough physical can make a tremendous difference. in what you're thinking about, what diseases or conditions are going to be high on your list versus ones that are way low on your list. I'm not testing for those today. I'm testing for those, if everything else, the more likely, okay, become, I can write off my list because they come back normal, then I'm going to start thinking more of the esoteric things. But right away, good history, good physical will help you really cut through a lot of the BS and get to the point a lot more quickly. And I call it my KISS rule, keep it simple, stupid. I'm not testing everything in the book. I want to have more direction. And that's what you really need to see from your veterinarian. Because you go to some of these places, they're going to run test after test after test. And when you ask them, what are you going to learn from that? Well, because he vomited. Well, I can give you a list a mile long of things that cause vomiting, but that disease is way down at the bottom. And it happened overnight. You're not going to get stomach cancer and have stomach cancer. And all of a sudden, from day one to day two, major difference. Those things are you know, it's going to be a slow, insidious onset. There are going to be changes in appetite over time. I mean, use your brain. And unfortunately, they don't do that. Okay, Louise. Promoted is fantastic. All right. Waving. All right. Sammy, hello. Julia. Good. All right. I want these. Come on, with all these people on here. Delia, how you doing? Okay. I want a cat who is fat and another who is skinny. How can I help my fat cat? Well, feed a bus. See, the problem with cats is that cats, you can't, you know, if a dog, what do you do with a dog? You feed him less, you take him out running, you get the ball, take him to the park, you can exercise. It's really hard to get a cat to exercise. So sometimes you're lucky enough to have cats that love chasing the things that are hanging on a string. They love the laser light against the wall. So you got to get them to do something. But when you have these cats that are overweight, first of all, you have to, one of the biggest mistakes we make is we feed our animals using the very, very non-sensitive, non-accurate eyeball approach. What do I mean? We take the scooper, we fill it up to where we think that's where, you know, how much we gave yesterday and the day before, and we pour it on the bowl. We have no idea really what how much they're eating. So the first thing I do is you take your scooper, fill it the way you normally would, where you would say to yourself, this is how much I feed. And instead of putting it in the bowl, put it in a little piece of paper or cardboard box or something. You tear the kitchen scale, meaning you make it zero with the box on it, and you pour it into the box. You need to know how much you're feeding exactly by the ounce. Okay, then, or the gram. Once you do that, now that's your starting point. You want to reduce that by probably 30%. Even 35%. You should be ultimately feeding your cat two-thirds of what he's eating now. But you want to get from the 100% down to the 66% in about a week's time, maybe 10 days. If you do it all at once, that cat's going to be going crazy. I don't know if you hear one of my cats outside my studio door here. He's going nuts and he wants in. He's a great cat too, by the way. But anyway, he wants in. So, and then you start reducing. Now, when you have two cats and one is fat and one is skinny, my hunch is, I haven't even seen your cats, that fat cat is pushing the skinny cat out of the way and eating his food too. So you need to now separate them when they eat. And if you're going to give treats or leave food out during the day, you can't. You have to start feeding mealtime. If you want to give the skinny cat some treats, take him in a different room for a little bit. Let him munch on treats during the day. So the key is you need to be vigilant. You need to be much more careful because one of the things we see in cats, often, especially overweight cats, just like overweight people, type 2 diabetes. So we want to prevent that. So you want to get these cats lean down. And if you can come up with some way to exercise the cat, that would be great. I know it's tough, but it can be done. All right. Hello, Dan, Annette. My dog has 4 spots that look like melanomas on her skin. I gave her a bath. I don't know if it's a melanoma or an allergy, therefore around uneven brown spots. Okay. So that is a good question. First of all, just to ease your mind. And again, this is not gospel. It is just a direction to give you. Dark spots on dog's skin, even if it was melanoma, are usually not that serious. Where is melanoma serious in a dog? Nail bed and oral. And the funny thing is, the amelanotic melanoma, that's the one that is not black actually is more serious melanoma. It's more aggressive than the ones that are dark. So melanomas in the mouth are usually aggressive, period, and on nail beds. Those are the ones you have to worry about. That's where you amputate the nail, the whole digit in the mouth. There's nothing good about it. It's going to bite you in the behind no matter what. So if it's on the skin, the best thing you can do is, if it's a concern, they're there for a while. If they are changing, then you want to get them removed anyway. And even though they're usually not aggressive, 100% have it biopsied. You need to know what you're dealing with. So I would not mess around. I can almost guarantee at some point, this dog is going to need to have its teeth cleaned. You're going to have a better reason to anesthetize. And if you're multiple and they're there and they're popping up, use that as your excuse for an anesthesia. Go ahead, have them removed, have them biopsied, at least one of them, or get the ugliest one, or maybe biopsy two of them if they look very similar, and get an answer. Once you have your answer, then you'll know how to proceed. But fortunately, the ones on the skin are usually not aggressive. Constant licking of paws. 10-year-old. So again, Jane, good question. When we have animals that are doing a lot of licking, again, a good history. Is it seasonal? If it's seasonal, then it's probably some sort of contact allergy or an allergen to something that's environmental. Okay. If it's all the time, not just during the spring and summer, but also year round, now I'm thinking food. And because the number one symptoms, all right, or 1, 2, 3 symptoms of food allergy in dogs is going to be biting the feet, licking the paws, ears, and sometimes rubbing the face. And it's not seasonal. So if those are the issues and it's not seasonal, now I'd say you probably need to start some sort of food elimination diet. The proteins that are most often implicated in canine food allergy, first of all, just to know, only about 15, maybe 20% of all allergies in dogs is food related. So it's not that common, but it can happen. So you're looking at poultry, chicken, turkey, you're looking at beef. Those are the first three that I would avoid 100%. And then as far as the grains, corn, wheat, and I would throw rice in there also, because those are the grains that are in almost every food. So it's always a corn base, a wheat base. It's always a poultry. It's got beef. So you're looking for things that do not have that. And you want to do what's called a food elimination diet. Be very, very strict. You want to look for what we call a novel protein. That means something new the body has probably never seen before. And a novel protein and something that is single antigen. You can't have a food that's got 2 or 3 different protein sources, because if they still are chewing themselves, right, then you're not going to know which one it was. So you pick single antigen. So it's a new antigen and it's single antigen. What are some of the crazy antigens we're using now? Bison, tilapia, cod, salmon, venison, rabbit, alligator. You used to be able to get kangaroo also, duck, pork. These are things that probably most foods that they have been fed over the years did not have. Therefore, they would be pretty good for now. Now, they can develop an allergy to that too, but after many, many months. So at least start there, 6 to 8 weeks, 8 weeks preferable, but 6 weeks. If you see a dramatic change, then you know it was a food allergy. And now you just slowly, one at a time, try different antigens or just stick with one that you were feeding. It's fine. But and as far as the grains, stay away from rice, corn, and wheat. Things like quinoa, things like barley, things like oats would be good. Or some vegetables. You can do broccoli. You can do green peas. You can do potato, sweet potato. So you want to get the carb. You want to get the protein. And if you work with your veterinarian, there are a lot of the veterinary schools now, their nutrition departments will help you through this by helping you navigate and maybe develop a diet that is going to be safe for your dog. All right. Coming tomorrow, Liz. That's great. Thank you, Jane. Great. Yeah, yes. All right. A dog ate poo the other day. Another dog then seemed upset. He's sleeping a lot in the morning. He seems to have ingested liquor. Okay. That's the thing. It was the other day. It's things like that don't happen overnight. It could be just a GI upset. I wouldn't be too worried about it. If everything else is normal, appetite otherwise okay, as long as you eliminate poo in the diet, which I'm hoping you do anyway. But again, we opened this. Be careful when you go to these parks. Some dogs will pick up anything and eat it we got to be really, really careful. Do not let them sniff everything. And if you have such a dog that does that, get a basket muzzle. It's going to relieve so much anxiety for you to know, oh my God, did my dog eat something that was toxic or something bad? And but usually when a dog eats poop, coprophagy, they do it all the time. They're usually not sick. So I wouldn't worry too much. But if that behavior persists, then Bobby should be checked out. All right. Okay. Oh God, I love this. Keep coming, guys. Very important to do that. Measure food out. All right. So, all right. I think that, well, that's all we have time for. I'm starting to get dirty looks from Mark, our producer. I'm supposed to be here for 30 minutes. I'm here for 41. Shame on me. Anyway, thanks for joining me. We're going to have fun a little bit today at the Rams game. We're getting a lot of sports lately. And for those of you who have any other questions, you don't need to wait till Sunday. Just get a hold of me. Yeah, obviously, you're here. You have my Instagram. So just hop on and ask away. I promise I'll help you. One of the things I have to tell you, and this is drives me nuts. So I can, as with most people, I'll bet you, but you can tell from me especially, that I can talk way faster than I can type and henpeck on a keyboard or on my phone with my thumbs. So therefore, I'm okay with simple texting back and forth, one or two word answers. You have a quick question, I can answer yes or no. We're done. If you're going to start asking me and writing back all these long details, send me your phone number. I'm going to call you and I can handle and get much more information to you, talking to you, than I can typing to you. So I'm not a fan of these long text conversations. So I'm, as I said, much more efficient. And with me, because I'm very busy, as you know, efficiency is key. So you have my green light to go ahead, send me your number, and I will call you, and we can talk it out that way. All right. Other than that, I'm so thrilled that many of you joined me today, and we'll be here next time, same bat channel, here on Pet Life Radio, here on my Instagram Live. Have a wonderful week. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.